And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today, folks. Hope you are enjoying the week. We're getting close to the end of it, at least the end of the work week. And I don't know how Thursday feels for you, but it feels pretty good for me. You know, I just, look, folks, you know, I'm really not pretending. I really do love life, and I'm grateful to God for it. And all the leftists in the world can't make me hate life or be disgusted with life. There's an old song that I heard many, many years ago at a really difficult time in my life, and the song just ministered to me. And you all may have heard it, but the refrain goes, "As long as Jesus lives, there's hope." And I believe that with all my heart. No matter what the circumstance, as long as Jesus lives, there's hope. There's hope for us, hope for our families, hope for us as individuals, hope for our country as a whole, because Jesus is still on the throne and nobody's going to knock him off. So I'm glad for today. I hope you are too. Thank you all for your prayers and your support. Thank you for supporting our network, supporting this program. We really do appreciate it. Look, this is The Awakening. I'm your host, E.W. Jackson. And I got a couple of things today that I want to get to and hope that I'll leave plenty of time for your calls. But here's the question I want to put to you in light of what's going on with impeachment and all the other problems that we are facing. Because I was thinking about this for people who might not be familiar with me and how I think and how many of us think about where our country is. How do you get from, okay, the left is out there and they're making all these crazy arguments and they want to do all these crazy things, but how do you get from there, Bishop Jackson, to the idea that they could subvert our constitutional republic and turn it into some sort of socialist or communist nation? Come on, that seems a bit far-fetched. I mean, you know, they might change it at the margins, but really, really changing it that significantly, that can't happen. Folks, I think it can. I think it can happen. And I'm very serious about this. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic about it. I really think it can happen. And I'm going to use two examples today to point out what I mean. But let me give you this sort of framework, this overview. I really believe that the people on the left have absolutely no respect for the Constitution as the Founding Fathers designed it. And I think one of the reasons why they attacked the Founding Fathers, although suddenly we've got a bunch of people on the left in the House who suddenly have rediscovered the Founding Fathers. They probably know nothing about them, but rediscovered Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and James Madison and so forth. But, you know, I don't pay any attention to that because I think that's just nothing but rank hypocrisy. They don't have any respect for the Founding Fathers. It's just convenient, but they do this all the time. And whatever's convenient for them, they support. And when it's not convenient for them, they don't support it, as long as it furthers their thirst and quest for power. But I really do believe this, that they don't respect our Constitution and they are in the process of shredding it. And shredding the Constitution is not the same as saying, let's throw the Constitution out. We don't need that. Let's do something else. It's just ripping away at it piece by piece by piece until it no longer serves as a bulwark against the encroachments on our freedom that could take us into a socialist or communist or totalitarian state. I think that's what's really happening here. You remember Obama's famous criticism of our Constitution? He said the Constitution is a flawed document because, and this is close to a quote, it failed to address redistributive justice. In other words, the Constitution does not provide for redistribution of wealth, and therefore he considers it a flawed document. which means that he doesn't have any respect for it because he thinks that it is fundamentally wrong. Okay? Fundamentally wrong. And then think about the attacks on the Second Amendment, that it, because of when it was written, it doesn't really apply, and it doesn't have any place in the modern world. And think about the attacks on the First Amendment. It doesn't really apply to hate speech. And what is hate speech? Hate speech is whatever we think is hateful, and you can't say that because it's hate speech. In other words, the fundamental rights given to us by God, secured by our Constitution, are under attack, and therefore the document that supplies those rights, or that secures those rights, I should say, is under attack. And if you can undermine the First Amendment, and so that it doesn't mean any longer free speech as we know it, if you can undermine the Second Amendment so that it no longer means the right to keep and bear arms, and then you go right down the line. I think this impeachment process is demonstrating an effort to undermine the due process clause of the 14th Amendment and the right to due process for every citizen in this country, which is fundamental to our freedom, because what it means is your government cannot act against you without going through proper procedures that are intended to recognize your inherent rights as a citizen of this country. It can't just come to you and say, we're taking this from you. We're taking your freedom. We're taking your property. We're taking this. We're going to do this. It cannot do that. It's got to go through a process that gives you the ability to defend yourself. And you have people in the Congress right now who have completely, completely denied President Trump that right, his due process rights, completely denied them. And Rand Paul brought up something that reminded me of how flawed this process is. It's flawed in its very foundation, this impeachment process, because the whole thing was started by a whistleblower whose identity remains anonymous. Well, not really anonymous. I think his name has been bandied about, but there's been no confirmation of who he is. And recently, Rand Paul brought up questions in the Senate, and the Chief Justice, who is, of course, presiding over the Senate trial, denied Rand Paul the right to ask the questions because he said those questions, he thought, might lend toward revealing the identity of the whistleblower. Well, folks, there is a fundamental right in the Constitution of the United States to confront your accusers. It's fundamental. And that's not just a principle that applies in criminal trials. It is a principle that applies to life. You should be able to defend your reputation by knowing who's accusing you. You should be able to defend your property by knowing who's accusing you. And you certainly should be able to defend your freedom by knowing who's accusing you. And, you know, I got to thinking about that and about the fact that the whole country has really been thrown into turmoil. The work of the Congress has virtually stopped. Thank God the president hasn't stopped. He's barreling ahead. God bless him for it. But the work of the Congress has come to a virtual standstill. The rest of us are in a sense, disserved because our government is no longer doing what we send it to do. Instead, it's engaged in pernicious, subversive, and malicious activity of trying to undermine and overthrow a duly elected president of the United States. And all of us have to deal with this, but the whistleblower gets shielded. Nobody gets to know who he is. I mean, folks, there's something very, very wrong with that. I don't have a problem with protecting his job. I don't have a problem with protecting his safety. I don't have a problem with protecting his property, his person, but his identity? He gets to create all this and then sort of hide? No. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
When I talk about how well the economy is doing and how wages are increasing, I sometimes get a caller remarking that they haven't seen any improvement in their economic situation. That makes sense. A rising tide will lift all boats, but some boats rise faster than others. But the most recent economic numbers show that economic growth has been most beneficial to low-income workers. An editorial in the Wall Street Journal put some of these economic numbers in perspective. During the first 11 quarters of the Trump presidency, wages for the bottom 10% of earners rose more than twice the percentage compared to the second term of the Obama presidency. Wage growth not only increased for low-income workers, it also increased faster for middle class when compared to the same period of time. Less educated workers also saw strong gains. For example, wages rose 6.1% at an annual clip for workers without a high school degree, 3.9% for those with some college. Both of these were three times faster than during the second Obama term. Young people were also getting big pay raises. Their wages increased on an average of 5.8% for teens, 4.4% for 20 to 24-year-olds, and 4.8% for 25 to 35-year-olds during the Trump presidency. The editors wondered how Mayor Pete Buttigieg could claim wages aren't keeping up with the cost of living. All he needs to do is look at his city of South Bend, Indiana, where the average weekly earnings have grown 9.9% over the last year, while employers have also increased both hours and pay. Looks to me that this rising tide is lifting all boats after all. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
When you have an older teen spinning out of control and not responding to your discipline, it may mean you have a very important choice before you. You can let that teen stay at home and wreak havoc in your household, or you can ask him to leave. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. It's a difficult decision. But parents shouldn't allow one out-of-control teen to destroy the good things going for the rest of the family. Sometimes the best option for an older teen is to release them, let them go. And as parents, we should pray for their growth and development in the world, in the ways they weren't grasping at home. Scary? Yes. But sometimes a child won't listen to our advice until he gets to the end of himself.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
Fran Fisher here. Are the wheels falling off Adam Schiff's wagon? Should the shampeachment wrap up Saturday? The Democrats are running a bully for president and they're spending money to attack one of their own candidates. We'll hear from John Bolton before he was selling his book, and Michael Bloomberg would shred the entire electric car industry. Next on Focal Point.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Now, I know, folks, that the Sixth Amendment provides for confrontation. In fact, it's called the Confrontation Clause. Provides for the ability of a defendant to confront witnesses in a criminal trial. But what I'm saying is, that constitutional principle goes beyond criminal trials. I mean, can you imagine being sued by someone who says, but you can't know who I am? Or having someone make an accusation against you in a civil situation, but you can't know who the person is? Of course not. It would not work. It may not be specifically mentioned in the Constitution, but I think it is definitely engrafted into all of our judicial proceedings. We just don't do that. But in this case, an exception is being made. And by the way, just to be clear, there is absolutely no statutory protection of the identity of a whistleblower. This is not. So when Justice Roberts ruled against the questions of Rand Paul, he was not doing so based on some statutory requirement. And so I'm wondering, so what is the basis? How do we reach this consensus that this whistleblower should remain anonymous? Well, you know how. The mainstream media, the establishment elite liberals, and the few, frankly, stupid conservatives who will go along with it. Because my attitude is, if you think you love this country and you think that something is going on that you think is destructive of our nation, you ought to have the courage to stand up and say it and be counted. And if you don't want to do that, shut up. That's right. That's my attitude. I mean, we got people who put on uniforms and fought and bled and died for this country. They could not do that anonymously. They had to put their lives on the line. And frankly, you got some little two-bit bureaucrat who wants to throw a rock and hide his hand? No. I don't even understand how it is that Republicans are putting up with that. I don't understand it. Because to me, it's completely and totally out of order. And it's setting a terrible precedent. That he want to bring down the president? Nobody has to know who you are. Just find something, make up something. Just get the ball rolling, and then you just step back and watch it. Watch the rock gather, moss rolling down the hill. Well, actually, I guess it's a rolling stone gathers no moss. Watch the snowball. watch the snowball gather mass as it rolls down the hill. Maybe that's the correct metaphor. But, folks, I tell you, it is my earnest prayer. And by the way, we're going to have a guest tomorrow to talk about this whole impeachment debacle. But it is my earnest prayer that this thing will end on Saturday, that they will dismiss this. We don't need to see any further witnesses. There's nothing else to see here. There's nothing else we need to know here. Adam Schiff is a liar. Jerry Nadler is a socialist demagogue. And Nancy Pelosi is just, as far as I'm concerned, Nancy Pelosi borders on the brink of utter mental collapse. You watch her talk and you just think something's wrong with her, because her hands are all over the place and her, you know, she's looking all over. Something's wrong there. I mean, Nancy Pelosi needs to go back to San Francisco and clean up San Francisco and help get the homeless people off the street and do something constructive with her life, instead of ruining it and pontificating and being a demagogue, Speaker of the House in the United States Senate, United States Congress, and the House of Representatives, because that's all she's doing. But that's one thing I wanted to put on the table. Do you think it's fair that somebody can get a process like this started and then remain anonymous? And by the way, I don't believe for a moment that Adam Schiff doesn't know who the whistleblower is and hasn't talked to him. I don't believe that for a moment. I believe that Adam Schiff is an inveterate liar. He can't help himself, because his staff, whoever wrote that letter, clearly had a legal background. That letter was written by a professional. It was written by an experienced attorney. And I believe the reports that Adam Schiff's staff coordinated with the whistleblower. And if he doesn't know who it is, it's sort of a wink, wink, nod, nod. My staff knows. I don't. Well, not really, because we never met, you know, or something. They've got some sort of cute, nuanced nonsense that they would put forth to prove. You know, it's kind of like Bill Clinton. I was never really alone with her. Or that depends on what the meaning of is. I guarantee it's going to, when this whole thing starts to come out, and it will come out, somebody's going to reveal who this gentleman is and what's happened in the background between Adam Schiff, his staff, and this whistleblower. And when all of that comes out, I guarantee you we're going to hear some of the most creative, legal, definitional arguments for what he meant when he said, well, I didn't know who the whistleblower was. I guarantee you. Well, what I meant was, we didn't really know each other that well. You know, I don't consider that I know somebody just because I've met them. Folks, this stuff is terrible. But you know what? That's not even the main thing that I wanted to introduce that's burning in me. I've said that shredding the Constitution, to me, opens the door for us to head toward a socialist, Marxist, communist-type system. But it won't be all at once. It won't be by an overthrow. It'll be right by right. You know what I mean? Each right being shredded, each right being destroyed, until one day you look up and you realize you don't have any more. You don't have any rights anymore. I mean, think about this. They're even trying to undermine the efficacy of our elections and the integrity of our elections, both by bringing in illegal immigrants to vote in our elections. I have no doubt that the left is doing that. In fact, you all know that in California, they're actually allowing them to vote in local elections. You're not a citizen of the United States and you get to vote? And these local leftist politicians out there saying, yes, they get to vote because they live here. But they're not supposed to live here. They're not here legally. So, folks, you undermine our First Amendment rights. You undermine our Second Amendment rights. You undermine our right to due process. You undermine our elections. Do you see a pattern here? And to me, that's how we get there. But here's another way we get there. And there are really two stories that I want to focus in on to talk about this. And both of these just absolutely incense me. One is, I'm not familiar with Alastair Stewart, but he apparently, in a Twitter battle with somebody, he's a newsreader for Independent Television News, I guess a news anchor, so to speak. But he was engaged in a Twitter debate with somebody called Martin Chaplin, Chapland, and he responded to one of Chaplin's criticisms by saying the following, quoting Shakespeare in Measure for Measure, "But man, proud man, dressed in a little brief authority, most ignorant of what he's most assured, his glassy essence like an angry ape, plays such fantastic tricks before high heaven as make the angels weep." A quote from Shakespeare. Well, as you can imagine, right? You know exactly where I'm going. Martin Chaplin happens to be black. And that quote from Shakespeare is causing all kinds of chaos and back and forth because it's racist. It's a racist reply. You know, folks, I mean, this stuff has just got to stop. It really does. It's just got to stop. The man was quoting Shakespeare, which apparently, by the way, he does a lot. And it's also been proved that he has used that quote to respond to others who were not black. But the fact that he used it for this guy, oh, wow, suddenly, it's racist. And it was a racist quote. You know, the left is doing everything in their power to tear our country apart. Using race, using gender, whatever they can get their hands on, anything they think weak-minded people will be stupid enough to buy into, they'll use it. Now, this is one of those instances. In fact, I made a comment. I saw this story on Breitbart. I made a comment about it. In fact, let me see if I can find my comment. I'll read you the comment that I made, which, of course, got some nasty responses as well. Because this stuff is just, here we go. Was it that far down already? Well, at any rate, I did make a comment to it. And what I said, in effect, was, I don't have to read it. I mean, I could just tell you what it was. This stuff is bordering on the psychotic, folks. It's bordering on the psychotic. I mean, it's paranoid psychosis to think like this. And you know, this is like mental illness that, you know, everything and everywhere and everybody is racist. I mean, where does this stuff stop? Well, it won't stop if the left has their way, because they want to use it to rip us apart, to rip our country apart, and then to remake it in their own Marxist, socialist, communist image. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
I guess you saw it. It was in the papers across the country. Russell Tanzi of Oakland, California, filed a suit against God in the amount of $100,000. Tanzi filed the suit on behalf of his legal secretary Betty Penrose, who blamed God for a lightning bolt which struck and destroyed her home in Phoenix some 9 years earlier. Tansy officially charged God with careless and negligent control of the weather. Well, it was more of a publicity stunt than anything else. We humans sometimes become little balls of ego walking around, and finding a way to get our names before the masses means a lot to us. So some will stoop to anything for the sake of fame. But you know, it sets one to thinking, who will represent the deity at the hearing? And should he lose, who will pay the amount? Will this open up other suits against him? Well, there's a lot of questions which come into our mind concerning the situation. Most of them are of very little importance. I doubt very seriously if the Creator would appear at such a hearing in the expected manner. Judging from past experience, we might as well forget the whole thing. A fellow named Job wanted to argue his case with the Maker, only to learn that it was a great mistake. There's another side to the question that pops into one's mind when he gets to looking at this thing of suits against the Creator. And that is, will the Creator get a chance to file suit against us for messing up his property? You know, it doesn't take one long to make his answer when that possibility opens up. We'd better leave well enough alone, for it's quite evident who will come up on the short end of the deal. Betty Penrose waited 9 years to file her suit against God. I wonder if we have ever paused to consider the patience that the Creator has with us. We've literally been making a mess of his property, destroying his creation, wasting his products for countless thousands of years. And yet he doesn't strike us dead to get what is due him. That's a mystery, an eternal mystery. The patience of the one above us as he sees what we have done and are doing with the things which are his. There's also the possibility that if we are to charge him with the things which we consider bad, he might in return place a charge upon us for the things we call good. That makes one stop pretty quick, for it's quite evident again who will come up short. I don't think I have enough money to repay him for a single day of sunshine, much less countless other gifts which he gives me. It appears that when it comes to suing the Creator, we'd better leave well enough alone. It opens up too many possibilities which could and would leave us flat, broke, and eternally in debt. And since we have thought about it, I guess we're already that way, in debt to God.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
So that's one, folks. This Alistair Cook situation in which he quotes Shakespeare, and suddenly, because, I guess, of the ape language. And by the way, did you know that people used to refer back in the 19th century, writers referred to the Irish as chimpanzees? This idea that somehow using monkey or chimpanzee or ape or gorilla is racist and always refers to black people, folks, that's just something that the left wants to impose on everybody. So that if you saw somebody acting a fool and you said, stop acting like a monkey, if that person were white, that would be okay. If that person were not black, okay. But if that person were black, that's racist. You can't say that. So this guy, by the way, and here's what I'm talking about with this corporate leftist bias. He lost his job. He lost his job over this. Over a Shakespeare quote. Because the guy he was debating happened to have darker skin. Well, that's just one. But here's the other one. And this one is even worse. But they're both indicative of a poison that is coursing through our culture that is always threatening to rip us apart. If the left had their way, it would. But they're all a bunch of liars. And I'm talking about these elites now. I'm not talking about rank and file people just trying to live their lives and trying to do the best they can. Like I said, that woman who appeared at a Pete Buttigieg town hall and said, hey, I'm a pro-life Democrat, and is there room for us? And Pete Buttigieg, in effect, said, nope, there's not. I'm not talking about folks like that all across this country who happen to be Democrats because their parents were, their grandparents were, and they kind of inherited that association. But they're just decent people with common sense trying to live their lives and take care of their families. And they're watching the Democrat Party be wholly co-opted by Marxist, socialist, and communist ideology. And it's a sad situation, these elites. But you know what? This is the way it always works, folks. The Bolsheviks weren't a majority in Russia. The communists weren't a majority in Vietnam. The communists weren't a majority in China. They never are. They simply benefit from most people sort of sitting on the sidelines watching things unfold. And for the threats and the intimidation that they use to silence others who, even if they don't agree, feel that the price is too high to be known as someone who expresses disagreement. And so they end up taking over. You know, the National Socialist Party in Germany, Hitler's party. Hitler was not a fascist. He was a communist. Well, he was a socialist anyway. Self-described socialist. They weren't a majority in Germany. So folks, don't think, well, there'll never be a majority. No, they don't have to be a majority. All they need is for the majority to just sit down, shut up, back off, and leave it alone. And we're not going to do that. But here's the other one. At the University of Montana, and folks, I find this to be utterly disgusting. At the University of Montana, there's a big controversy roiling right now because apparently there was some unrest about the racial diversity of the campus. And you know, you ought to read this book called Discrimination and Disparities by Thomas Sowell, in which he talks about the fact that people make all kinds of decisions that end up putting certain demographic or ethnographic groups into certain positions or places or professions or whatnot. And it has nothing to do with discrimination. It has nothing to do with somebody else on the outside. It just has to do with certain cultural norms or ideas that take root and people follow those patterns. And it ends up producing a sort of statistical imbalance because, well, why are so many of those over here and so few of them over here? The first question it seems to me needs to be asked is, you know, how many, what percentage of black folks or folks of Hispanic background or folks of Asian background or folks of Indian background, how many want to go to school in Montana? I mean, Montana is not exactly the hub of action. But oh no, there must be something, something's wrong. There's got to be something wrong because we don't have enough minorities there. But this is the mindset. Like somebody is conspiring to make sure that minorities don't go to the University of Montana. It may be that most minorities say, I don't want to go to Montana. You know? I mean, I love Montana, by the way. I've driven through Montana. I've visited people in Montana. And I tell you what, if you want to go where you can get plenty of space, oh, Montana is one of those places. I love it in that sense. I can't move out there, though. My wife's not going to have that. But yeah, I mean, how many people who grow up in urban environments, which is probably where most minority people grow up, how many of them want to go to Montana? Oh, but you can't raise that, Bishop. That's racist to even suggest that. Yeah, people make choices that have nothing to do with being forced or prevented from going certain ways or doing certain things. But at any rate, let me get to this, because otherwise I'm going to freeze out all my calls. The number is 888-589-8840. So at any rate, the University of University of Montana decided to do a contest, an essay contest on Martin Luther King Jr. Day among their student body. They do have minorities there, just a very small percentage. Well, guess what? They got all kinds of flack for being tone deaf and shameful. And one student says, she uses the name of the Lord in vain, so I won't repeat that. But she says, this is shameful and embarrassing. And I say that as a pasty white girl. I'm cringing for you because clearly none of you who ran this contest were raised with the good grace to, to do the cringing yourselves. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Why? Why should they be ashamed of themselves? Because they only had four people respond to the essay, and they were apparently four young ladies of European descent, four young Americans of European descent. Now, folks, here's what one of them said, Whipperman wrote on Facebook. I will never truly understand the experiences of African Americans and therefore decided this opportunity was not for me. It is great that my fellow white people are speaking out against racism, but this is an excellent example of speaking over black voices. It's gonna be a yikes for me. In other words, here's the point. Martin Luther King doesn't belong to all Americans. He only belongs to black people. All Americans can't comment on Dr. King. Only black people can write an essay about Dr. King. Now, folks, that is one of the dumbest, most divisive, poisonous, toxic ideas that you can have in a constitutional republic. Because, you know, liberals don't think this stuff through. So look, my ancestry came from Africa to this country. George Washington's came from Great Britain, from England. I have written about George Washington. I've read about George Washington. I've talked about George Washington. Oh, you can't do that. You can't understand what George Washington went through. I've spoken about ethnic histories in this country. Oh, you can't talk about the history of the Irish. You're not Irish. You can't talk about the history of Italians. You're not Italian. I mean, you know how stupid this is. And the fact that a university bows down to this nonsense instead of saying, listen, Martin Luther King was an American. Any American can write about Dr. King. That's point number one. Point number two, Martin Luther King was trying to bring us together, not divide us. And so the idea that you can't write about him unless you are black is completely contrary to everything he stood for. I mean, folks, are we sending people to universities to get smart or to get dumb? I mean, this stuff is just crazy. And see, this is the kind of demagogic rhetoric, behavior, attitudes, policies that convince people America doesn't work. We need to be a socialist nation. We need to be a communist nation. Because it just doesn't work as is. Well, folks, I've gone on a while, but when I come back, I'm taking your calls. 888-589-8840. Anything I've talked about is on the table. If you got something else related you want to bring up, feel free. We'll be back in a moment.
Keith Becker's brother tragically died at 18 in a drunk driving accident and hadn't lived a Christian life. This is Focus on the Family Minute, and at the funeral, Keith began to question what he was hearing.
It was confusing to me. All of a sudden, when my brother died, everybody was talking about how good of a Christian he is. I knew that was a lie. There was something within me that said, Keith, that's not the truth. Just because you die in America doesn't mean you go to heaven. I began to question, how is it that we can live like hell and expect to go to heaven? Now, guys, I'm not saying I know where my brother Todd is. I can't make that judgment. But what I can tell you is that began my journey to the cross of Jesus Christ.
God often uses tragic circumstances to awaken our hearts to truth. After Todd's death, Keith and his parents came to faith in Christ, and you can hear their story at familyminute.org.
The purpose of government is to secure God-given or inalienable rights to man.
America's premier historian, David Barton.
John Dickinson, who's also a signer of the Constitution, he said, an inalienable right is a right which God gave to you and which no inferior power has a right to take away.
Wall Builders Live captures the ideas of the Founding Fathers and then applies those ideas to the issues of today. Sunday morning at 11:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, Target.
Target.
You thought we were done?
Did you think we would give up?
Well, of course not. We still stand strong with our belief that men do not belong in the women's restrooms or changing areas. It's absurd. We should not have to walk in your restrooms with the fear of someone of the opposite sex walking in on us.
Together, we will stop this open door policy.
Help us by signing the pledge to boycott Target at afa.net.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Here's the left's argument, folks. America is so hopelessly antiquated with its old constitution, so hopelessly racist and white supremacist, so hopelessly polluting the environment and destroying the environment, so hopelessly caught up in antiquated ideas about sex and morality and gender, that the only thing you can do for this country is you got to have a fundamental overhaul, fundamental transformation. You got to get rid of all that stuff and you got to replace it with a socialist, let's be clear what they're really talking about, a communist type system. And we've been hearing that since all the admiration for Mao Zedong and for the Soviet Union and Fidel Castro and for Che Guevara. And for Ho Chi Minh, we've been hearing this stuff for generations, folks. Let's not kid ourselves. That's where people would like to take us. And you know what? We're not going. Let's go to the calls. Let's see. We've got in West Virginia, we've got Richard. Richard, welcome. Richard, you're on. Okay, Richard, are you there?
I am there, Brother Jackson. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling.
On diversity, in our local morning paper in the Eastern Panhandle, this morning in the sports section, Roger Goodell was on there. He's head of the NFL.
No,
and he was complaining that there was not enough diversity in the head coaches and the assistant coaches. Now, I believe if my figure is right, 70% of the NFL players are black.
Or more. It might be about 75%, but you're right. Okay. It's up there.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, if I've got several hundreds of millions of dollars and buy a football team and want a winner, I'm going to hire coaches and assistant coaches that are the best I can get. I don't care if they're green, pink, or blue. Yep. If they have the talent and ability, that's who I'm going to hire. Now, if I've got that much money, I don't want no Yahoo telling me who I got to hire to come up with a winner and pay my bills. Thank you.
Yeah, Richard, look, I could not agree with you more. And here again, there's the assumption that if there's not the same percentage of people in the NFL coaching system as there are in the country, something is wrong. Well, maybe two things. Maybe people haven't matriculated through a system where they've learned those skills and abilities, but in time they will. Maybe people aren't particularly interested in that avenue of profession. Maybe that will change, and it does change over time. You know, ethnic groups have patterns of interest. And it's not because somebody's telling them to do something. It's because cultural changes and norms and things that happen. Here again, Thomas Sowell does a brilliant job of explaining this and that it has nothing to do with discrimination. But here again, when you mentioned Roger Goodell, I thought to myself, oh, brother, this is the guy who gave us Colin Kaepernick. So as far as I'm concerned, I think Roger Goodell's he's making $45 million. I'll do a better job than Roger Goodell as NFL commissioner, and they can pay me $4 million, a tenth, you know, because I think he is a complete buffoon. And he ruined, in fact, I think he did tremendous damage to the NFL. But let me get it from there, Richard. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Bobby in Ohio. Bobby, welcome. Bobby, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to know if you agree that Nancy Pelosi believes in and utilized quid pro quo when she said she wouldn't turn the impeachment papers over to the Senate unless she got a list of witnesses.
Bobby, of course. Of course she was using a quid pro quo. I mean, first of all, and not only that, the House doesn't have the ability to dictate to the Senate. They are two independent bodies within the legislative branch of government with two independent sets of rules and how they operate and conduct their business. And the Constitution gives them two different roles in the impeachment process. So, but here again, like I said, I think Nancy Pelosi needs to go back to San Francisco and figure out what to do about all those homeless people. And leave the rest of us alone, because to me, she is a train wreck. And here again, their hypocrisy, Bobby, knows no bounds. That's clear from the way they treated the Clinton impeachment versus the way they're treating the Trump impeachment. So, yes, it was she was asking for a quid pro quo. Maybe she should be impeached. Thanks for the call, Bobby. Let's go to Raymond in Arkansas. Raymond, welcome.
Bishop Jackson, thank you for your work. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for what you say, sir. And thank you for having a backbone.
Jesus thank said you, Raymond.
That, you're welcome. Jesus said that Satan come not but to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus said that I have come that I might have life, that they may have life, and they may have it more abundantly. That being said, how is it that a born-again Christian vote for the Democrats?
Yeah. Raymond, that's the age-old question. Listen, folks, I left the Democrat Party back in, I think it was 1980, it might have been 81, but right in there, when I came to the realization that the values of the Democrat Party were completely incompatible with my values as a Christian. And I'd grown up in a family that were Democrats. My dad was a Democrat. All my siblings that I knew were Democrats. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in the urban city of Chester, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia. Pretty much everybody I knew were Democrats. But I could not do it. And my conscience would not allow me to remain associated with the party. How it is that others can is a question I cannot answer. But I'll tell you what, I'll say this. People are going to answer to God for what they've supported in supporting the Democrat Party and the candidates who go in there and pass policies that help kill babies, redefine marriage, redefine gender, come against Israel, and on and on and on. I could go with the list, but thanks for the call, Raymond. Let's go to Ed in Tennessee. Ed, welcome. Go right ahead, Ed. You're on.
Hello there, Bishop. Doing a great job. Listen, I have a question here. Do you think the new treaty between Mexico, Canada, and U.S. will eventually become a new nation confederation similar to the Confederation of Europe? An example would be having the same currency similar to the euro.
Well, I know that the treaty certainly doesn't provide for anything like that. I think, look, you know, you raise an interesting question, Ed, because every time a country enters into treaties with other nations, there's always, I think, legitimate concern of whether that treaty will end up surrendering the sovereignty of the nations that enter into it. And of course, the United States of America, being the behemoth in the world, needs to guard our sovereignty jealously, because there are people who would love to subvert us and upend us and stop us from being the most powerful and influential nation in the world. I remember when after the Revolutionary War, there when we entered into the Jay Treaty with Great Britain, and we had certain relations with France. There were people who felt that if we that the Jay Treaty was really leading us back into subservience to France. And there were people who felt that our relationship with France, that had helped us win the Revolutionary War, was going too far, and it was turning us into Francophiles. I think this is an ongoing debate, but I will say this. I think this president would never allow that to happen. And as far as what happens after he has finished his two terms, and I'm believing God it will be two terms, my personal opinion, my personal prayer and expectation, then we'll have to watch what future presidents and congresses do with that treaty to make sure that it does not surrender our sovereignty or try to turn us into some kind of a European Union type association. Okay, let's go to George in Tennessee. George, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, George.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Well, great. Good talking to you. I just had one quick question. Since there's so much controversy about trying to get hold of the whistleblower, and that's a big problem, why can't we talk to the contacts that the whistleblower supposedly overheard?
I think that has happened. I mean, the people that the whistleblower... Well, look, first of all, my understanding is the whistleblower had absolutely no firsthand knowledge of anything, okay? None. Which to me is bizarre in and of itself. I mean, you're going to impeach a president and get the process started on the basis of a person who's at best got second or third hand knowledge? I mean, that in itself is enough. But I think we've talked to most of the people who claim to have had any first hand knowledge. And by the way, we haven't talked to a single person who can say firsthand, I heard the president say that this is a quid pro quo, that I will not release foreign aid to Ukraine until and unless they investigate the Bidens and dig up dirt on them. Adam Schiff made up that lie, but no one has corroborated it. So why are we even here? Thanks for the call, George. Let's see if we can get to John in Missouri before we have to go. John, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm blessed, John. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, sir. Hey, all I want to tell you, you hit the nail on the head. Well, you know, you talk about where we're at, how we got to where we're at in this country, about Martin Luther King. You know, he is American. We all love him and what he preached. And, you know, and we are, I believe that America is under attack again from within. And you said, And we are the majority, conservatives. I mean, the people that love this country, we are the majority. And we need the people that were there when this country was formed with George Washington against the British. We need the people from World War II when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor and all those people who signed up.
Thank you, John. I've got to go. We need people who love this country as is. Do not think this country is fundamentally flawed or needs to be fundamentally transformed. People who think we need to keep striving to be a better country, but follow godly wisdom and common sense in doing so, and follow the Constitution, which is the most successful governing document in the history of mankind, and these people don't have any respect for it. These leftists don't. Well, folks, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for your calls. Didn't get to all of you, but tune in tomorrow. I'll be back. And remember, in the meantime, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.